Eric Szilagyi, President, Florida Power and Light.
All right, sir. Well, thanks for your time. So first off, since 2006, FPL customers have been paying what's called the nuclear cost recovery fee. We see it on our bills. It enables FPL to charge in advance for future costs of building and improving nuclear power plants. Some lawmakers in Tallahassee say this is unprecedented, it's unfair, and they want you to change the law. What is your argument for keeping it?
Well, the advanced cost recovery legislation that passed in 2006 has worked beautifully, actually. It's been a real success story here at Turkey Point. You know, we've actually now built new expansions of our we call them extended power uprates at both Turkey Point and St. Lucie because of that law. And those aren't advanced future projects that may not come about. These are projects that have actually created about 10,000 jobs at Turkey Point, expanded the plants. We've had a $683 million economic impact on the Miami area. And now, in this spring, we're going to be finished. We're going to be generating 525 megawatts of new power out of the nuclear plants, zero emissions, using no incremental water, and of course, at a price for the power that is among the best of all types of resources. So it's a real success story from a Florida Power and Light standpoint. And one thing that I think is important for customers and your listeners to understand, there is no payment advanced for things that are way in the future. It's a little bit of a misnomer. Every year, we have to go before the Public Service Commission and actually ask for them to review the expenditures that we've already spent. We only recover the money for costs that we've already incurred. So it's not in advance of that. We're not putting money in a bank account somewhere. We're actually getting reimbursed after the commission reviews it. They audit it effectively and say, yeah, you know what? You did what you said you were going to do, and you spent the money wisely, prudently is the exact terminology, and now you're allowed to recover for it. 90% of everything that's in the bill is to pay for the power uprates at Turkey Point and St. Lucie, and that's been a home run.
But there are, the critics will say that there's no guarantee that that money, that nuclear cost recovery fee, will be spent on what it's proposed to be spent for, on the nuclear power plants themselves. How do you make sure that it is spent on those things, and where is the accountability on that?
Yeah, that's just not right when they say there's no guarantee. Again, every year we go before the Public Service Commission, which is the entity that regulates the utility industry, and we ask them permission to spend a certain amount of money in advance, and they determine, so we go in and say, this is what we expect to spend next year, and they say that's reasonable or not, and then we actually go out and spend the money, having collected nothing from customers at that point, then go back in a year later and say, this is actually what we did. These were the results of that expenditure. And if they agree that that's prudent, which is actually a higher standard, then and only then are we allowed to recoup that money through the bills. Again, it's been a home run for FPL customers. We're actually saving customers today $7 million a month in cheaper fuel costs because of the uprates that we've done at Turkey Point and St. Lucie. So this is actually putting, you know, power into the grid using new nuclear power and saving customers money every day today. It's not pie in the sky.
But then there are other people who say that the Public Service Commission has sort of been a rubber stamp for FPL and other utilities, and they have not said no. They've really in recent years haven't said no to anything that you've proposed. So I guess the public kind of feels like the PSC might be in FPL's back pocket.
You know, that's just not true. You look at the Public Service Commission, I think, frankly, that's a disservice to the professional staff that are up there and the commissioners. You know, we go through multiple days of hearings under oath, under sworn testimony, providing expert witnesses to this. And here's the bottom line for customers and if you will, the critics to think about. There are 55 electric providers in the state of Florida. FPL provides the lowest bill in the state by far, about 24% below the state average, 26% below the national average. We have the highest reliability of any investor-owned utility with a 99.98% reliability rate here in Florida, one of the best in the nation. customer service this year. We won for 9 years in a row a prestigious national award for the best customer service in the nation. No utilities won more than four in a row before that. You know, we're providing our customers with the best value proposition of any electric utility in the state, and I think one of the best among the country. Does that mean that we can't continuously improve and do a better job? Absolutely not. We're always looking for new ways to deploy new technology and be smarter about how we maintain the grid. And investing in smart new nuclear facilities like Turkey Point and St. Lucie is just that, and it's paying off for customers today, and it will pay off for generations to come. You know, look, 10 years ago, our company was burning 41 million barrels of oil to generate electricity. Today, we're burning less than a million barrels. That's a 98% reduction in oil because we invested in fuel-efficient technology, moved away from oil, and got out of natural gas. Nobody told us to do it. Nobody asked us to do it. Nobody ordered us to do it. And as a matter of fact, some of the same critics that are criticizing the nuclear power fought us investing in these new technologies. That's $4 billion that we're saving our customers every year in oil that we're also, by the way, not sending overseas to a lot of places that aren't as friendly to the United States as we'd like.
You've mentioned the two new reactors being proposed for Turkey Point in South Dade, a cost there of an estimated $20 billion to complete in the next decade. How do you know that the demand will be there for that type of power?
Well, every year we update our projections on demand. We work with the state. We work with the University of Florida and other agencies and scientists who do population studies. We look at what demand is, and we update it all the time. And right now we are in the early stages of applying for a license for the new plant, Turkey Point 6 and 7. That's a multi-year process. We've actually been very, very careful and spending the least amount possible in order to get that license. We're still going through the process, and we're hoping that we're able to get that license and be able to look at building a nuclear plant at the right time in the future. And you have to look at it every year, and it does change every year, and you have to be wise about it.
The Washington Post recently reported that there were 68,000 metric tons of waste accumulated next to nuclear reactors nationwide. How big is that an issue? Is that finding a place to put it for Florida Power and Light?
Well, it's not an issue from a standpoint of storage. I can't speak to the Washington Post. I can tell you this. What we have, as an example, at the St. Lucie facility, and that plant has been in operation since the mid-1970s on one unit and the early 80s on the other. You could take 100% of all of the nuclear fuel that we have used at that facility, and you could put it in a room that's 41 feet by 41 feet, and it's about 10 feet tall. I mean, it's, you know, compared to a coal pile, it's teeny. So now that said, we believe at Florida Power and Light that there should be a central repository national for spent nuclear fuel. We have supported that. We've been paying into that for decades, and the federal government promised that that would occur, and it hasn't yet. We're able to store the fuel on site at Turkey Point and St. Lucie safely. There's plenty of space, but we believe it does make a lot of sense to have a central repository.
We hear a lot about nuclear energy, and there's no doubt that you have led the way at FPL. FPL's led the way in that department. You talked about weaning itself off of oil, moving to more nuclear energy, nuclear power plants. What about the other newer sources of energy that are even more efficient, obviously, using nature, things like wind and solar energy? Where does FPL stand in those departments?
Well, we're a big supporter of renewable energy. We deployed and have deployed more solar in Florida than any other company. Our sister company, Next Energy Resources, is actually the largest producer of electricity from wind and solar in the nation. And so, combined, our two companies have invested more in renewable energy than anybody in the nation. Now, as much as a fan as we are, I'm not here to tell you that it is a silver bullet to fix all of the energy needs of the country. And, earlier you said an even more efficient technology. The reality is that wind and solar is not more efficient than nuclear power, as an example. It has its place in producing energy, much like a good investment in a 401k account. in your financial planning, you want diversity. You want to try to have a variety of sources of energy. We believe renewable energy clearly has its place. Large-scale solar projects are becoming much more affordable. We've proven that. Our projects came in $100 million under budget. They're working and operating today in places like DeSoto and Martin County and up at the Kennedy Space Center, and we're very proud of those. We'd like to do more. We intend to do more. We just need the support up in Tallahassee.
Climate change and sea level rise have been top of mind for many since the Hurricane Sandy and what happened in the Northeast. We saw a glimpse of sort of what the future looks like here in Florida, too, with all the erosion. And it was kind of scary. You know, there's some plans that you see that indicate places like Turkey Point in South Dade and that nuclear power plant will be underwater in a few decades. How is FPL planning for the new landscape of sea level rise in places where you have a major nuclear power plant you're spending $20 billion to upgrade that you might need a boat to get to?
Yeah, I haven't seen any studies that show that South Florida is going to be underwater in a couple of decades.
A few decades by the end of the century.
Yeah, what I will tell you is this, that we have engineered and designed these facilities with the idea of them operating for many, many decades. Turkey Point and St. Lucie, for that matter, are significantly higher than the other areas around them from a sea level perspective. Remember, Turkey Point had a direct hit on Hurricane Andrew, and that was the highest storm surge recorded that I'm aware of in South Florida. And we had no issues at all with storm surge, and that was from a Category 5, direct hit from Andrew.
How does it change, though, your perspective? Now, however long it's going to be, we know we'll be dealing with that. And sea level rise is a fact that we'll have to deal with. But from a utilities perspective, how do you plan for the future more broadly?
Well, you plan every day for it. You do a lot of engineering and take into account what you expect, and then actually go well beyond that. So you do look at 100-year floodplains, as an example, and 100-year-plus storms. And then many times you even add margin on top of that. That's why these facilities are 25 feet above sea level just at their base. You can't predict the future. My crystal ball is not completely clear like anybody else's. But what you do is use the best scientific data available. You keep an open mind, so you try to find what are the best solutions. There are a lot of engineering solutions. And then you have to also balance that, which what's in the best interest of the customers. And if it didn't make sense to put Turkey Point 6 and 7 down there, we wouldn't do it. But that's also why we're investing in other technologies like the renewables, but also at our Port Everglades facility. That's a power plant that was built in the early 60s. Middle of this year, we're going to be taking that plant down and putting a new power plant that's 35% more fuel efficient, 52% less CO2, and a reduction of 97% and 98% in other greenhouse gases. The savings from fuel alone pays for the power plant and then saves our customers a couple hundred million more over the life of the project.
We asked Mr. Szilagyi, our listeners through Twitter, what they want to ask the president of Florida Power and Light, and here's some of what they told us. This is Johnny, who asks me to ask you, what plans does FPL have for subterranean lines in the future, building power lines underground, especially in cases of hurricanes and winds where we have all lost power with over the lines that are above ground?
Sure. Well, actually, we've done a lot of undergrounding. About a third of our entire system is now underground. We have about 71,000 miles of line here in Florida, and about a third of that is underground. We actually supporters of undergrounding and are willing to help defer some of that cost, up to 25% of that, for communities that are interested. Undergrounding can make a lot of sense in certain areas, and in others it can be prohibitively expensive when you have to start tearing up streets or in a downtown area, as an example. It might be too expensive, and everybody has to look at what are the pros and the cons. The other thing is undergrounding, while it's great against high winds, it is susceptible to other problems like flooding. We saw that, unfortunately, during Superstorm Sandy when Manhattan itself flooded because of the storm surge, and the vaults that are all underground of with the electric vaults, they flooded. And, of course, you can't restore the power until the water actually recedes, whereas if it's above ground, you have quicker access to the lines, and you can have floodwaters on the ground not affecting the power lines that are on the poles. So there's pros and cons, much like any of the technologies. There's no one that's a silver bullet.
Danita on Twitter asks, will FPL bring fiber to non-commercial users, fiber optics, so that everybody can benefit from the speed of the types of communications?
Well, FPL is not in the fiber optic business. We actually have a sister company that is called FPL FiberNet, and they are one of the primary backbones of fiber here in Florida, and they are expanding.
And finally, Thomas on Twitter asks, why isn't FPL leading the drive to place metered charging stations on South Florida streets for electric cars? And with all this influx of electric vehicles, sounds like there'll be more of a need for that type of thing. Is that something that FPL could lead the way on?
Yeah, actually, we're big fans of electric vehicles and any way that we can to help, you know, reduce emissions. And we've actually put over 300 vehicles in our own fleet that are hybrids as well as electric. We are deployed the very first bucket truck in the country that's actually a plug-in hybrid. And so we're very proud of what we've done, including a lot of biodiesel. All of our trucks run on biodiesel, which is saving our customers money and reducing our emissions by 15%. Charging stations are something that we would be happy to work with the community. Obviously, that is something where the city or the private entity who owns that property would want us to work with them on. We've put charging stations in on the properties that we have. So we actually have solar-powered charging stations at our headquarters where we pull in our plug-in vehicles right underneath the solar panels and plug them in and charge them up for the day's work.
Well, cool. Sounds like something for the future. Mr. Eric Szilagyi, who's the president of Florida Power and Light, thanks for coming and answering these questions, and thanks for your time.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.